Trying to keep up with Amazon FBA changes sometimes feels, well, less like managing a business and more like decoding ancient scrolls, doesn't it? Especially when changes drop right before something huge like Prime Day.
Oh, absolutely. It's a constant challenge for
Yeah.
so many sellers. FBA is the core of their operation. So when Amazon tweaks the rules there, it forces this scramble, this rapid rethink of strategy.
Exactly. And that's why today we're really ripping into a bunch of sources, articles, analyses, all specifically breaking down these big Amazon FBA updates rolled out for 2025. Our mission, pretty simple, really. Cut through all the noise, figure out the absolute most important shifts happening in FBA capacity, the fees, the
Well,
policies,
the key stuff.
right? And tell you what you need to know fast so you can actually do something about it and, adapt effectively.
And the changes this year, they are significant, particularly how they impact inventory flow. Understanding them quickly is just crucial to avoiding costly mistakes or, worst case, running out of stock during peak sales times.
All right, let's dive straight into what seemed to hit sellers immediately and, well, pretty hard, the capacity crunch. The sources were really clear. Tighter FBA storage limits were the headline act, specifically impacting June and July 2025.
Yeah, that's the most acute pressure point right there. Amazon significantly pulled back the reins. They reduced the storage allowance from what was previously based on like 6 months of forecasted sales volume
Right.
down to roughly 5 months. And this isn't just a small tweak. For some sellers, the impact was, well, dramatic.
Dramatic is definitely the word. We saw reports of cuts up to, what, 75% in some sellers' allocated space.
Yeah, massive cuts for some.
I mean, imagine having your warehouse capacity slashed by three quarters right when you need to build stock for Prime Day. It created immediate urgency and, like, real problems for planning.
It really did.
Yeah.
And it's compounded because they brought back ASIN-level restock limits, too. So it's not just about your total volume anymore. Even if your account is technically within its overall capacity cap, Amazon might restrict how much of a specific product, a specific ASIN, you can actually send in, which, adds this layer of planning complexity that makes it harder to ensure your key products are sufficiently stocked.
Okay, so how does Amazon actually decide who gets hit with these tighter limits and who gets a little more breathing room? It's not totally random, is it?
No. Thankfully, there's a method, even if it can feel a bit opaque sometimes. Capacity isn't static, it's heavily performance-based. Amazon allocates space primarily based on your inventory performance index, your IPI score.
The IPI score always comes back to that.
Always. Along with your sales velocity, basically how fast you're selling stuff, and your overall inventory efficiency.
Ah, okay. It feels like that IPI score is pretty much the heartbeat of your whole Amazon operation.
It absolutely is, maybe more now than ever. The sources really stress that having slow-moving or, excess inventory just sitting in FBA is a killer here. It eats into your usable capacity. So if you're holding on to old stock, that space is blocked. It can't be used for the fast-selling items you need in stock, especially for events like Prime Day. Sellers who perform well, high IPI, good sell-through, they generally get more space.
Now, something interesting about fees related to capacity. Amazon actually got rid of the automatic overage fees back in mid-2024, which, on the surface sounds good, like a penalty's gone.
Right, you'd think so.
But the consequence is actually, well, far more restrictive, isn't it?
That's a really crucial point. You won't get hit with a bill just for being over your limit anymore. The new reality is it's a hard physical limit,
A hard stop.
a hard stop. If you exceed your allocated capacity, Amazon simply will not let you create any new FBA shipments. Period. Until you get back below that limit, you can't send anything in.
Yeah.
So it shifts the risk from like financial penalties to the very real operational risk of unexpected stockouts if you aren't managing levels precisely within your allocation.
And this became critically important with those Prime Day inbound deadlines looming large.
Exactly. The window for getting inventory in was super tight. While the specific dates change year to year, for Prime Day 2025, June was absolutely the critical month. You had deadlines like June 9th for minimal splits and June 18th for Amazon's optimized distribution,
Right.
which meant sellers needed to have their shipments created and carrier appointments locked down about a week before those dates. If you missed that window under the new hard limits, well, your inventory just wouldn't make it into the fulfillment centers in time for Prime Day sales. It demanded serious foresight and quick action.
So why is Amazon doing this? Why tighten the screws like this now? What's their official reasoning for these changes, especially the capacity cuts?
Well, according to Amazon's statements, which the sources highlighted, they apparently observed higher than usual inventory levels among sellers this spring.
Okay, so basically, sellers were sending in a lot more stuff than was actually selling quickly. Warehouses getting clogged.
Precisely. Their stated goal is to prevent overcrowding in their fulfillment centers and, you know, encourage healthier, faster stock turns across the network. From Amazon's point of view, too much slow-moving inventory just clogs up their system, makes their operations less efficient.
Makes sense from their side, I guess.
But for sellers, yeah, it forces a much leaner, more disciplined inventory planning approach.
Yeah.
Which is particularly challenging during historically high volume seasons, right?
Definitely. Okay, let's zoom out a bit, because the capacity limits weren't the only big change. The sources also detailed other pretty significant policy and fee updates for 2025. And it feels like there's a consistent theme running through all of this, right? Rewarding efficiency and, well, penalizing the extremes.
That's absolutely the core message Amazon is sending, yeah. They are pushing sellers hard towards what you could call, like, a Goldilocks inventory model.
Not too much, not too little.
Exactly. Just the right amount, moving quickly.
And the IPI score, as we mentioned, that's still central to avoiding those really severe capacity caps?
It remains totally non-negotiable. Keeping your IPI above that minimum threshold, which is still 400, is essential for getting any reasonable amount of FBA capacity. And remember, the four factors driving IPI, excess units, sell-through rate, stranded inventory, and your in-stock rate.
Right.
The analyses we looked at really emphasize that excess units and sell-through are the power players here. Reducing old, slow stock and speeding up how quickly your inventory sells are the most effective ways to boost your IPI and hopefully earn more capacity.
Okay, let's talk money then, because the fee landscape is where these incentives and penalties really hit home. There's some good news, apparently, but definitely a significant catch involved.
Right, so genuinely good news first. Amazon kept the base FBA fulfillment fees and the standard monthly storage fees for the U.S. flat in 2025.
Okay, phew.
So we didn't see that general fee hike that hit in 2023 and 2024, which is, you know, a relief.
Okay, a moment of relief, but here comes the but.
But they introduced, or significantly tweaked, targeted surcharges. These are designed to directly hit poor inventory management. First up, there's the storage utilization surcharge that started April 1st, 2025. This is basically a penalty if you're holding more than 26 weeks of stock in FBO.
Over 6 months of supply?
Over 6 months, yeah, based on your recent sales. So it's a direct cost for simply overstocking, period, regardless of how old the stock is.
Okay, so keeping too much costs you extra, just flat out.
Exactly. And then they tighten the screws on old inventory with the aged inventory surcharge, what used to be called long-term storage fees. As of February 1st, 2025, these penalties kick in earlier.
How much earlier?
In inventory sitting 271 days or more, that's roughly 9 months now, gets hit with a surcharge. And the rates go up once it hits 365 days plus. This used to start at 12 months. So Amazon is being much more aggressive about discouraging holding stock for more than about 9 months.
Okay, so penalty for too much, penalty for having it too long. What about the other side? What if you don't send enough in?
Yeah, that's the part that really reinforces that Goldilocks idea. Amazon also introduced a low inventory level fee. This actually started back in April 2024.
Okay.
It's a smaller per unit fee that gets charged when the item sells if you've consistently kept less than about 4 weeks of supply in FBA. And they measure this based on both your 30-day and 90-day supply levels falling under 28 days. It's not huge, but it clearly signals they don't want you intentionally running super lean, you know, constantly on the edge of stocking out.
Wow. So you can literally get dinged from both directions now, holding way too much or holding way too little. It really forces you into that narrow middle ground.
It absolutely does. The whole fee structure now is explicitly designed to reward holding balanced inventory levels that move efficiently. And it penalizes both chronic overstocking and chronic understocking.
This source has also pointed out some changes to how inventory even gets into Amazon's fulfillment centers, didn't they? Something about inbound and prep processes.
Yes, a couple of key shifts there that impact costs and your workflow. They made some adjustments to placement fees back in January 2025. They actually lowered them slightly for bulky items.
Okay.
Which was apparently intended to reduce the need for those large items to be split across multiple warehouses initially.
Makes sense for big, awkward stuff.
Right. But for standard size items, As of February 2025, they got rid of the partial shipment split option.
What does that mean exactly?
It means you now face a clearer choice. Either you accept Amazon's automated distribution plan, which might split your shipments across multiple locations, meaning more complex packing on your end, or you pay for Amazon's new inbound placement service to send it all to a single destination, and then Amazon distributes it. It essentially pushes more complexity or, you know, cost onto the seller.
And adding to that, the fees for Amazon doing the prep work, their own prep services, those went up too in February 25.
Exactly. So if you rely on Amazon to handle things like labeling, polybagging, or bundling your products after they arrive at the warehouse, it's now more expensive, which is, well, a pretty clear incentive to do that necessary FBA prep yourself, or maybe more realistically for many businesses, use a third-party logistics partner, a 3PL, to handle it before you send inventory to FBA.
Right. Saves money and probably ensures it gets done right the first time, too.
Definitely helps ensure smooth receiving, avoids delays and extra charges.
That actually leads us perfectly into alternatives. With all these tighter FBA capacity constraints and the increased costs for storage streams and prep, the sources really strongly highlighted the increasing importance of leveraging options outside the core FBA system, like Amazon warehousing and distribution and these third-party logistics providers.
Yeah, these options are shifting from being just nice to haves to becoming, well, pretty essential components of a resilient Amazon supply chain strategy, Amazon warehousing and distribution, or AWD.
Right, AWD.
That's Amazon's own service, specifically designed for storing excess inventory outside the immediate FBA fulfillment network.
And the key benefit there, especially considering everything we've just talked about,
yeah,
is that inventory stored in AWD does not count against your standard FBA capacity limits. That's a huge advantage. You can keep a buffer stock, maybe that extra month or two of inventory. You just can't fit into your main FBA cap. You keep it in AWD.
Okay.
Then you can set up automated replenishment for Amazon to pull from your AWD stock and send it into FBA as your inventory sells down and space opens up.
So it's like a reserve tank within the Amazon ecosystem. What about the cost? How does AWD stack up against, say, using an independent warehouse?
While AWD storage fees did see a slight increase in 2025, and the peak season rates are notably higher, the analyses we saw suggested that depending on your volume and product type, AWD can actually be more expensive than some independent 3PLs, especially during those peak Q4 times. Which brings us neatly to the role of those third-party logistics providers, the 3PLs.
Okay.
You mentioned e-fulfillment service as an example from the sources. How do they fit into this tougher FBA environment?
A 3PL offers a really vital alternative that operates completely outside of Amazon's network and rules. They provide several key advantages that directly address the pain points Amazon's creating. First, obviously, they act as a storage buffer.
Right.
You can hold significant surplus inventory with the 3PL, safely away from Amazon's volatile capacity limits and those new storage surcharges we talked about.
So it's a place to keep your strategic reserve without Amazon penalizing you for it. Got it.
Exactly. And you can use the 3PL for flexible replenishment. You ship inventory from the 3PL to FBA on demand precisely when you have available capacity or when your sales velocity dictates. This gives you much more control over your inbound flow compared to just sending everything direct from your own warehouse or manufacturer.
And what about fee predictability? That seems like a big deal compared to Amazon's structure.
Huge deal. Many 3PLs offer simpler, much more predictable storage fee structures compared to Amazon's complex, dynamic, peak season-heavy pricing. That predictability is incredibly valuable for budgeting and, you know, financial planning.
So a 3PL offers flexibility, predictable costs, kind of a counterbalance to the Amazon system.
Yeah, they're a crucial safety valve, really. If Amazon unexpectedly cuts your FBA limits even further, you have inventory held by a 3PL that you can still access and use, whether that's for fulfilling orders yourself, FBM, or just staging replenishment back into FBA as space allows. It adds this layer of resilience and lets you scale more reliably without being entirely at Amazon's mercy on capacity.
And circling back to those increased Amazon prep fees we mentioned, using a 3PL for FBA prep sounds like almost a no-brainer now.
The sources definitely highlighted this as a key strategy. A good 3PL can handle all that necessary FBA prep, the labeling, the polybagging, bundling, maybe adding inserts before the inventory even ships to Amazon. This saves you money compared to Amazon's increased prep fees. And crucially, it also ensures your shipments arrive at FBA correctly prepared and compliant. That helps avoid receiving delays, unexpected penalty fees, potential listing issues. It's often just more cost-effective and more reliable than letting Amazon do it.
Okay, so pulling this all together.
Yeah.
Considering the tighter capacity, the hard limits, the new fees hitting both over and under stocking, and those inbound and prep changes, what are the absolute essential actionable strategies that you, listening right now, should be implementing based on these insights?
Okay, based on the sources, the top priorities seem to be: 1, ruthlessly audit and optimize your current FBA inventory. Get rid of the slow movers, clear out excess stock, boot your API, and free up that precious capacity.
Get lean and mean, basically.
Precisely. 2, get much better at demand forecasting. You need to be more accurate than ever, especially heading into peak seasons like Prime Day and Q4. Send realistic quantities you're confident will actually sell through quickly within that 5-month FBA window.
Forecasting isn't just about buying anymore. It's fundamentally about managing your FBA relationship, isn't it?
Exactly right. 3, proactively use Amazon's Capacity Manager tool. Don't just wait to be assigned capacity. Get in there, see what's allocated, and if you anticipate needing more for future months, request it early. The sources noted that requesting early can sometimes get you approved capacity sooner, potentially letting you ship ahead of schedule.
So ask early, potentially ship early. Makes sense.
4, diversify where you hold your inventory. Leverage AWD for that within Amazon ecosystem buffer stock that doesn't count against your main FBA limit. And crucially, explore partnerships with 3PLs for that external buffer storage, the flexibility, and that cost-effective FBA prep.
That external buffer sounds like your insurance policy against Amazon's volatility.
It really is. 5, take control of your FBA prep. Either do it properly in-house or, more often, use a 3PL to handle the labeling, polybagging, all that stuff before it hits Amazon's docks. It saves money on Amazon's higher prep fees and prevents those receiving headaches. It's an investment that pays off in lower costs and smoother operations down the line.
And the final sort of overarching strategy through all this?
Stay agile. Just stay agile. Continuously monitor Amazon's announcements. Keep a super close eye on your capacity monitor in Seller Central. Policies, limits, they can shift. You need contingency plans ready, whether that's being prepared to fulfill via FBM if needed, or having a 3PL lined up to handle overflow orders just in case Amazon throws you another curveball. Being adaptable is absolutely non-negotiable now.
That's a really comprehensive look at some pretty impactful changes. Mm. Just to wrap things up then, what's the core landscape for Amazon FBA sellers trying to navigate 2025?
Well, the fundamental reality is that operating on FBA in 2025 demands tighter control, much more precise planning, and greater strategic flexibility than in past years. The days of just bulk shipping stock just in case seem to be over. They're being directly penalized by these new fees and those hard capacity ceilings.
And the single biggest takeaway for anyone listening right now, what should they really focus on?
Success in this new environment hinges on staying informed, being aggressively proactive in managing your inventory levels and your capacity requests, and truly optimizing your operation for efficiency. Managing your inventory effectively isn't just about maximizing sales anymore. It is absolutely critical for controlling costs and, frankly, ensuring your products can even get into FBA in the first place.
Right. It's about maintaining that sales velocity, controlling those newly introduced costs, and making sure your products are consistently available to customers, particularly during those peak shopping moments.
Exactly. It forces a more holistic view of your entire supply chain, looking beyond just the FBA fulfillment center itself to, you know, external partners and processes that support it.
Which actually brings us to a final thought to maybe leave you with. While these changes from Amazon feel incredibly demanding and they definitely create significant friction for sellers, is it possible they also represent an unexpected opportunity?
How so?
Well, by forcing sellers to adopt leaner, more efficient inventory management practices and build more robust supply chain strategies using things like AWD or 3PLs, maybe Amazon is inadvertently pushing businesses towards healthier, more cost-effective, and ultimately more resilient operations overall.
That's a really powerful way to frame it, actually. The need to navigate this volatility pushes sellers to build capabilities and partnerships that create a truly robust supply chain. So while the immediate challenges are definitely real, the skills and the infrastructure you develop to thrive under these new rules, they could benefit your business far beyond just the Amazon ecosystem. It could set you up for longer-term success, regardless of whatever Amazon's next policy shift might be. It's kind of about turning mandated efficiency into a lasting competitive advantage,